Our guest on this latest episode of my Screen Music Podcast Soundtracking is an actor known for his roles in Shallow Grave, Trainspotting, Velvet Goldmine, Little Voice, Brassed Off, Star Wars, and, well, the list goes on and on and on. Ewan McGregor's latest project sees him reunited with his good friend Charlie Boorman for Long Way Up, available now on Apple TV. Long Way Up sees the pair motorcycle all the way, well, attempt to, from the bottom of Latin America to Los Angeles on electric Harley Davidsons. It really is a wild and hilarious adventure, and I am, gotta say, absolutely loving watching it. The show features some brilliant tunes too, from familiar rock and pop to songs specific to the countries through which Ewan and Charlie travel. And it's with one such song that we begin. And I apologise now for my pronunciation. Bicicleta by Canacu y El Tigre.
Viene bien a la luz de tu alcance. Viene bien a la luz del romance. Vamos, mamita, a caminar muy bien. Acompaño tu bicicleta. Viene bien un jueves por la tarde. Viene bien cuando nadie te mira respirar. Y vamos, mamita, a caminar muy bien.
You look so well. You've survived it.
We made it through another one. I know. We did. Oh. It's a bit of a spoiler, isn't it, doing the interview? Oh. But you kind of know that we didn't die.
I got totally addicted watching it today. I got through four episodes before I had to go and feed small children because they were so hungry. It's so good. It's like a real-life drama.
Yeah. I tell you what, we're so lucky to have Claudio with us. Because he sort of elevates it. Every time we've done it, he's our cameraman that rides with us, you know. Mm. And this time he had his little drone. And so we've got this different perspective on the show, and that we see things from the air, which we never had before. And so when we're riding through a desert, you get to see the vastness of the world around these two tiny little bikes. But it was great to be back with Charlie, because Charlie, as you know, had a terrible accident in 2016. And we'd sort of drifted apart a little bit, Charlie and I guess, because I'd moved to the States and he was in London, and then he was very, very busy with different trips that he makes and did different TV shows that he was doing. So I just kept missing him. And then we sort of, like friendships can, it just sort of got a bit quiet. And then I got this phone call that he'd come off in Portugal and had really smashed himself up. And it was for a little while, none of us knew quite what the outcome was going to be. And it was a bit of a wake-up call for me to not let that friendship drift, you know, but to make sure that the people that you love, that you know, you make sure that you're there for one another. And so it was great. And also because he'd smashed himself up, he was at home for 2 years. He couldn't really get anywhere. So he was always there when I was in London. I was able to go and stay with him and hang out with him. And we just, you know, we just started talking about another trip, and then off we went. We couldn't help ourselves.
I've been dreaming of doing a trip through South America for years.
We're here with world-famous actor Ewan McGregor.
But life got in the way. And now I've decided to do the trip with my best friend, Charlie Boorman.
You've got to look after the relationships in your life, and if you don't, you're just... you're losing something that's very important.
We'll ride 13,000 miles from the southern tip of Argentina all the way to Los Angeles.
150 miles every day is a long way to go.
And if that wasn't enough of a challenge, we wanted to see if we could do it on electric motorcycles.
I think it's the future, electric.
You'd be the first people to go this distance, charging as you go.
Oh my God, it's so great, isn't it?
Oh, the power's just gone.
But this time you're on what I've referred to as Tron bikes, which, like, the noise of them is... I'm just waiting for you to pull one of those discs off your back to, like...
We should have gone in full Tron suits.
Like, lighting up, which is in itself is an amazing kind of dramatic part to the whole sort of show. But I love the kind of... The kind of comedy, the natural sort of warmth that you have for each other, even when... Before you kind of set off and you're joking about the weather and all that kind of stuff, and you know, and your dad messaging you going, "Have you not even checked before?" You know, this kind of stuff. But that's what's so lovely. You feel like you're on this journey with you right from the start.
And, oh, good.
Yeah, and I couldn't believe how much you start the work on the show before you actually get on a bike. It's like, was it months in advance of like the preparation that goes into it as well?
Yeah. I mean, we were lucky because the whole electric thing was our producer Russ Malkin's fault, really, because he floated it out there one day. Maybe we could go electric, because Russ is into record breaking and doing things for the first time, and he loves that aspect of things. Whereas that doesn't really matter to me or Charlie so much, but the adventure of it, the experience of it. But once he'd floated it out there, we started thinking about it, and there's this definite new wave of electric powered everything's from skateboards to single wheels things to everyone's flying around on electric something.
Yeah.
And we just thought that motorcycles, that's the way it's going to go, I think, and it would be fun to try it. I mean,
yeah,
so that as soon as we made that decision, then you have to decide which electric bike. And Harley Davidson just released pictures of this amazing bike, the Livewire. And nobody would have, we just liked the idea also of nobody would believe that we were doing this adventure on a Harley, you know, it sort of appealed to our sense of humor.
Yeah.
But they really are cutting edge, and they've got all these drawings and designs for lots of other electric stuff, bicycles and scooters and stuff that are not at all, you know, the old Harley that we think of.
Yeah.
And they're just a great company to work with. But then we have to try and get them to make this Livewire into an adventure bike, which they did. Then we have to get it down to Ushuaia because we had to do the trip starting there so that we could call it Long Way Up, because we'd already done Long Way Down. That's the only reason. Which is so stupid, but it's the only reason. Like, logistically, getting everything down there was such a nightmare, but we got everything there, and then we arrived, then the bikes arrived, and then we were like, okay, now how do we... Snowed in for like 4 days, like a bike trip. Talk about planning. We were like, oh, okay.
It's the conversation about the churros outside the sweet shops, just amazing. That's brilliant. I found a picture that I wanted to show you. Now, I don't know if you can see that or not.
I can.
That's me on the salt flats in Bolivia.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
Yeah.
They're great, aren't they? Did you stay in that salt hotel, that funny salt hotel?
Yeah, with like goat covers sort of thing, like like llama sheets.
They had a live llama in the foyer that I thought was sort of an animatronic one at first, and then I realised it's a real one. I mean, it might, you know, I don't know how it ends in its life. I don't want to know, but it's in there for now.
The one thing I wanted to ask you about, because whenever I go on a road trip, the one thing that I love to do is listen to music, and music kind of really accompanies road trips, and I think of road trips and stuff. But you guys can't really do that, can you? Because you're filming and you're talking to each other, so you can't really have, you know, tunes on whilst you're going down amazing sort of, you know, scenic routes and stuff.
We can do, but it does get in the way a little bit. And then also sometimes it's a bit of a palaver, like just operating, you know, while you're riding. Trying to change a track or something can be dangerous. So you tend not to do it so much, but it does, because the songs come into your head more than anything. It's like that in Touching the Void. Do you remember when when he's got the Boney M thing in his head and he can't stop? I found that I would have a lot of odd stuff. I listened to a lot of Peter Gabriel.
I went back
to the sort of nostalgia. I don't know if it's because I'm about to be 50 or what it is, but I started listening to quite a lot of Peter Gabriel, and I listened to a lot of Dire Straits. I was like, why did Dire Straits become so unpopular? I think they're great, but remember, it was big and then it wasn't big.
MTV days, you know, it was like kind of one of the first big videos on MTV, wasn't it, as well?
Why did it go south for them, though? You would know. I don't know.
I don't know, actually. No idea.
Peter
Gabriel's like really cool still. I saw him do the Soul Tour, which was amazing.
He's amazing, yeah. We've always worked with him on the Long Way stuff because he's got this amazing library of world music, you know, and he's just really knowledgeable about all that. So we've always asked for his help in trying to get the right tracks for the right
places
we're going through. So musically, I think you'll find Long Way Up is quite interesting too, because the soundtrack is quite specific to where we are at that time. We didn't come across as much music on the trip as I'd hoped. I think it's because spent too much time like going on holiday in Mexico, where there always happens to be a band at the hotel, you know. And I just thought maybe the whole of South America was going to be like that. There'd be a mariachi band come out, but it didn't happen. There wasn't just quite so much street music as I thought there would be, but it was fun nonetheless.
Last times I saw you when we did that wonderful event in Edinburgh, where you'd just done the voice stuff for Beauty and the Beast, and you were being very self-deprecating about your accent and about
my Mexican Spanish
Mexican French.
Good. But to be honest, you know, to blow my own trumpet, they didn't like me to do the French the R.
So genuine French.
As soon as you put an R in French, it does become sort of Mexican. That's just the way it is. It's just the mechanics.
Can we use the last
little while just to talk a little bit about music, because there's a wonderful thing with, you've obviously, music has been part of a lot of films that you've been involved in, both in terms of the performance, but there are so many films that you've done that have a very strong musical presence, you know, way back to Trainspotting and things like that. You know, you kind of, that soundtrack was incredible. And I think what Danny did with that was really shifted things, I think, for British film in terms of how they looked at using music within film. But for you, does music play a big part in terms of when you are kind of prepping for a role or you're getting into character stuff? Do you ever kind of make playlists and things like that when you're thinking about characters?
Yes, I often ask the director to make me one, because it's because it puts you in a similar headspace for what he or she is thinking about. Like, lately I was playing, I haven't finished it yet, but I was playing Halston, the fashion designer, which is all 60s, 70s, 80s. And, you know, he put together three different playlists for different times of that, of our film, you know, of the series. And that was really useful, through disco and then Studio 54 and, you know, what was around then. And it is useful. It can be very useful. And then I find just more than specifics, it's quite useful to be listening to the right kind of, I don't know, listening to the right kind of music to put you in the right mood for what you're shooting that day. I don't know, if you're doing something silly or fun, then you're not listening to some bleak rock, you know. But if you're doing some sad scene, then definitely you're listening to something that puts you in the right mood. Yeah, it's important that.
I mean, I think that in my head, whilst, you know, when you're playing Obi-Wan, you've got John Williams in your head, obviously. You know, it's that, those kind of Star Wars, seriously.
I remember Big Liam telling George this, because I think at some point, it took so long to shoot those fight scenes that we were just sort of running out of steam. And George, one day, he said, action! And he started playing the theme, the Star Wars tune while we were doing it. And Liam just stopped and he went, no, switch it off. It just wasn't happening. Like, we can do it without the music, George.
That's hilarious. with something like with the Trainspotting with Danny, though, you know, whilst you were shooting that first film, did you have any idea with regards to the kind of musicality of it in terms of how rhythmic the film was going to be with this soundtrack, really?
I think no is the short answer. Seeing Trainspotting for the first time, I remember clearly. I was with my uncle Dennis and Ev, and we watched it in a screening room in Soho. And I remember coming out just sort of like, you know, not really being able to speak. Like, oh my God, because you don't know. That's what's brilliant about Danny, is you don't really know what's happening, what's in his mind. You know, you don't know the whole picture that he does. You know. Exactly, you know, is never a better director to work with in terms of finding the scene and playing the truth of the scene and him pushing you to explore parts of yourself that you might not have thought about doing so on your own. He is, you know, my favorite, if you're allowed to have a favorite. He is that. But you don't, the only tip I had was, of course, we'd made Shallow Grave and I'd already seen that, you know, seen what, from the experience that we had on set to what that movie looked and felt like and sounded like.
I'm not ashamed. I've known love. I've known rejection. I'm not afraid to declare my feelings. Take trust, for instance, or friendship. These are the important things in life. These are the things that matter, that help you on your way. If you can't trust your friends, well, what then? What then? This could have been any city. They're all the same.
That's why I just wanted to work with him all the time, you know, was his actor, because it's just thrilling. And it was, like, Shallow Grave came out and we're like, oh, this is new, this is different. And Brian Tafano's photography was really key to that as well. He was absolutely part of that the genius of all that, coming up with these shots that were just, that just blew us away. You know, people weren't making movies like that in Britain at that time, so we were, it was really exciting. Yeah.
Moulin Rouge as well. I mean, I watched that recently. It's one of my lockdown films of the kind of the many that I've had the time to go and revisit and enjoy again.
Does it hold up?
Absolutely. It's a wonderful kind of just glorious, luxurious experience.
Yeah, that's what it felt like to shoot. It was like a dream. It was like a big dream. It was amazing. Yeah, amazing.
Look at your face when you talk about it. You got
It was like, I'll never forget some of those, you know, doing that tango scene where walking through all those dancers, and I mean, literally the cranes going out the door of the set, you know, the studio, it's like, there's just vast music and color, and it was all there on set. It was all happening for reals. It was just amazing. It was just great.
Like a big playground.
Yeah, amazing. It was just amazing. It blew my mind.
His eyes upon your face, his hand upon your hand, his lips caress your skin. It's more than I can stand. Rivers my heart. Feelings I can't find.
Little voice as well.
Oh, yeah.
I was talking to someone about that the other day, and just Jane Horrocks, the performance of that as well was just extraordinary. When you're watching something like that as well, you know, being part of that wonderful ensemble. I mean, I'm kind of blown away. I didn't know that she had that capability when that film first came out as a singer and a, you know, that kind of mimicry thing that she does within for those characters, particularly for that film, obviously.
Yeah. It was written for her, you know. She did it on stage first. It was a play, and it was written for her. I don't know if I can tell the story, but it was one of the things I remember. I was asked to do it, and then Mr. Weinstein decided he was going to recast it, and with an American star who I won't name, and set it in America. And I went, well, okay, well, I'm not doing it then. And
good for you.
Went back because it's Jane's part. It's her. It was written for her. You know, who else could do that? Who else should do that? You know.
Absolutely. I mean, she just, the character and the complexities of that character is just absolutely, you know, under her skin, really, with that character. It's incredible.
Yeah. The minute you walked in the joint, I could see you were a man of distinction, a real big spender, good looking, so refined. Say, wouldn't you like to know what's going on in my mind? So let me get right to the point. I don't pop my cork for every man I see. Hey, big spender! Hey, big spender! Hey, big spender! Spend a little time with me.
I had the pleasure of speaking to Mr. Todd Haynes as well.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God. He's like a proper musical nerd, isn't he? He's amazing. Yeah, oh,
he's amazing. He's really an interesting filmmaker.
Loved chatting to him.
It's like there's sort of two worlds of filmmakers, I think. And there's the team like Todd and Danny, and there's like people have really got something to say. I've got an, they can't not say it the way they can say it, you know, a visionary creatively talented people. And then there's another side where, you know, people that can get by and know how to point a camera in the right place and everything. But, you know, it's just interesting how you work, how it's so satisfying to work in that first group and so not so satisfying to work in the other. You know, it's life, isn't it? You work on all these different films with lots of different people, but he's brilliant. The other film that's coming to my mind is Brassed Off, with a whole different
absolutely kind of another Mark Harmon film.
That was lovely too. The music in that was really special, and being part of sitting in with the actual Grimethorpe Colliery band, who were the band were telling their story, but they're actually the people in the movie, you know. Moment where, because I used to play French horn all through school as a French horn player, so I'm playing a tenor horn and I could play it. But so as we're doing this, they made me I think I was meant to be the first tenor horn player. So the actual first tenor horn player was now sitting next to me in the number two seat, which I think he didn't much like. And they gave me this tenor horn, and as we were doing the scene, I was playing along because we had the music. I could play along, but I was slightly flat. And I said to him, I said, Why am I flat? It sounds a bit flat when I play. And he went, because you can't play. And I went, oh, okay. So I thought, okay, I'll take it. And then I gave him my horn. I said, just have you have a go. And he had a little play through, and he went, it is flat.
Cheeky bag.
Yes. Yes.
Listen, we've run out of time, but it's an absolute treat to get to chat to you. And I'm thoroughly enjoying Long Way Up. I just hope you get back there for Christmas once I get to the end of the series.
Well, who knows? Maybe we don't make it, you know. Never, who knows?
Don't spoil it!
It's a cliffhanger. It's so nice to see you. There's always a pleasure. Lovely to see you.
You too. Take care, and I hope to speak to you again soon, Ewan. Thank you so much.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye. Take care. Bye.
Bye now. Hay un demonio en mi cabeza diciéndome qué hacer. La historia se ha oído y ninguna termina bien. Doctor, necesito algo más fuerte que yo, porque los días se hacen largos y no quiero despertarme mañana sintiéndome igual que yo.
From the soundtrack to Long Way Up, that's Carnaval by La Luz Mandarina, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with the wonderful Ewan McGregor. My huge thanks to Ewan for taking the time to talk to us. You can watch Long Way Up on Apple TV now, with the songs featured on the soundtrack available at Apple Music. Head to edithbowman.com to subscribe to this podcast and catch up with all of our previous episodes, including my chats with Danny Boyle and Todd Haynes. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We are at Soundtracking UK, and you can see Ewan's smiley face on our YouTube channel, where I put together a companion piece to this show. Next up, we have the frontman of Biffy Clyro, Simon Neill. The band wrote a score for the Jamie Adams film Balance Not Symmetry in 2019. And Simon talks about that, as well as a whole host of incredible scores and filmmakers that have quite clearly been an inspiration to him. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.